If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Whiskey Ginger fans. Happy New Year. Welcome. I'm so excited to be starting off the year once again with you kids. If you want to come see me live, the Red Rocket Tour has begun. I'm so excited. I go to Edmonton, Canada, first stop on the tour, and then I go to Denver Comedy Works, ooh, one of my favorite clubs in the entire country, where I film my first album. Such a good spot. Edmonton, Denver. Then I go to Minnesota, Land of 10,000 Lakes. Minneapolis, baby. Then I shoot over to Madison, Wisconsin. Madtown. I love you guys. And then February, March, April, May, we have a ton of dates on the website. Go to andrewsantino.com. That's where you can get all that information. That's also where you can find the tour, find the merch, the Red Rocket merch, the Whiskey Ginger merch, everything. The Red Rocket stuff is all up there and loaded. Slugger Santino shirts are there. Everything is ready to rock. So go grab some merch there. Also, our Patreon is in the link in the description below. The Patreon is going to be one-on-one interaction with fans, a lot of Cheeto chats, live stuff here in the new year. We're about to release that. And then at the end of the month, Robert Ree and I are doing our podcast, so stay tuned. That's a coming. But in the meantime, enjoy the episode.
In here, we pour whiskey.
You are that creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
Gingers, oh hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Whiskey Ginger. My guest today is one of my favorite people on earth. I say that for all my guests, but I mean it once again today. It's Mr. Shane Moss. Shane!
Hey! Cheers! Cheers! Thank you.
Dude. A little sipper in the afternoon. I'm having a little bit of Joseph Magnus. You're having a little Eagle Rare. You tried the Magnus. Did you like it?
I did. I like both.
Yeah, which one do you like more, do you think?
Maybe the Magnus.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm actually new to drinking again. I take like years off at a time.
Cool.
And then I'll start again. And this has been the best start again where I've been like drinking reasonably and everything.
Yeah.
And so I'm like reacquiring all of my tastes.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, I don't have the most sophisticated palate developed again just yet.
You're going to get it, kid.
Yeah,
yeah. You're going to get
it back. You just got to put the time in.
Yeah. It's just about work. That's more than anything. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's interesting because do you have any... Are there any alcohol that you used to like and now you don't like, or vice versa?
I mean, not since like being a kid and being like, guess I can't drink pucker anymore.
Yeah.
But no, I never had the thing where it was like, oh, I had a bad night on tequila, now I can't drink tequila anymore,
because it's
just like that would mean that I can't drink any booze anymore.
Right.
I've had enough bad nights off of everything.
I mean, I've had rum is my spice rum. Captain Morgan, people know me. I've talked about it on the show. I think it's the most repulsive whiskey on earth.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, rum on earth. There's something about it. Spice rum to me is like regular rum is not so bad.
Yeah.
But Captain Morgan's is like a spiced specific flavored rum.
Yeah, that's gross. that's one that I was into
early on
and not so much anymore. But there's I think that's a natural progression. Like Jaeger is like,
I don't know, man. I know some 40-year-olds that still have Jaeger. Like, I know there's some guys, like, you know what I mean? There's some guys I bump into once in a while. I'm like, you're still drinking like that? They take, what is it? With Red Bull, Jaeger bombs. I'm like, that's, you have three kids.
Yeah.
Like, you have like a full-time job. You like are responsible for like a crew of people.
Yeah.
I don't understand that, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's nice to be, how old are you now?
I'm 39. I turn 40 next May.
Congrats.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay.
It's nice to be like in the groove of like, so I was thinking about that today. What you just said is like you take time off. I've never taken a big time off, but what I will do is I'll go drastically down. Like I'll go in 1 week, I'll just have like one at home by myself. Mm-hmm. Or like I've never like gone cold turkey and had none because I think I'm an Irish drunk and it's just a part of my lineage.
Sure.
But I do... And now that I'm in this part of my life, what I do now is I drink less and more specifically. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I really don't go out and get just punch drunk, wasted.
Yeah.
But I will have a few at the house, you know, with the old bag. Her and I will get toasted. But it's, like, specific to a time, and it's a small amount. It's not the same.
Yeah, I mean, I had to take breaks because I was still in the mode of like, yeah, I'll hang out with people after shows and stuff and drink. And now it doesn't matter how much I've had to drink, that's not going to be appealing to me. No. I'm not going to be like, yeah, I'm just going to party with you guys all night. That just doesn't. So I don't get myself in trouble like I used to.
Smart.
So I used to be, you know, I used to black out like fairly often, and that was so the first time that I quit drinking years ago for like successfully, like for a few years, what it was I didn't like, I need to get into AA or anything. I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna take 1 month off of drinking and just see how it feels.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that, I was like, oh my god, like I'm so much more clear-headed, I'm so much more productive, what was I doing? And so I just took and then I just like didn't. My girlfriend was happier with me at the time and everything. And then I just kept on doing that for like a couple of years. And then when I single again, this is a pattern too. And then when I single again, started drinking again.
Sure.
And then met a lady, couldn't, you know, fun at first in the beginning, partying. And I was like, we need to not do this all the time. Yeah, and then, okay, I'll sober up. And now I'm single again, so started drinking again.
That's a good pattern. That's not a bad pattern.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It sounds like when your life gets good, you start to clean it up more.
So when you find
someone, you want to be more responsible, you clean up. And then when a relationship falls to pieces, you're like, back to the bottle, baby.
Yeah. It wasn't even, like, this time around, what it was I was at a festival this summer. It's like Burning Man. It's called Azora outside of Budapest. And
whoa,
it was this.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Sure.
Don't just scoot over something so magical like that.
Yeah.
And we have to get into a lot of different categories. If people that don't know Shane, you're no stranger to substances because you enjoy dabbling in drugs.
Yeah, I do.
In your historical past, I guess. Yes.
And
tell us about Budapest.
Mostly, I'm a big psychedelic advocate.
Yes.
I have shows that I do about psychedelics sometimes and that sort of thing. And so I got brought to Budapest to give a talk about DMT. That's how amazing my life is. Not even to do comedy or anything. Just like, hey, talk about your thoughts on DMT.
How many times have you done DMT?
Well, I've had a little over 100 like breakthrough experiences, like the full going all the way. And then outside of that, like I've microdosed DMT and stuff. So like hundreds of times I've had like small amounts of DMT, which microdosing DMT, I don't like microdosing psychedelics, but microdosing DMT is awesome.
Why don't you like microdosing psychedelics?
Because it just doesn't, for me, it doesn't do anything. It seems to like...
Your tolerance is too high.
It's just like, you know, I've heard... I like it, in theory, it's like, you know, you don't actually feel it, but it makes you a little more creative, maybe eases depression. For me, I've been like, oh, I'm going through a bit of depression right now, I'll try microdosing, and that seems to only make it worse, which psychedelics usually exacerbate whatever is going on inside of you. And the big breakthrough experiences, which is I actually recommend for people, are the ones where you just kind of see your inner worlds more clearly, and that's the stuff that you learn from. And so that's much better for like sorting out some depression issue or some like, say, career funk or not knowing exactly the direction I want to take things in life. A very big mushroom trip will bring me like a little bit of clarity and to like, okay, this is where I want to go going forward. I'll have like 5 different ideas of do I want to start this podcast? Do I want to put this tour together? Right. And like all of it is... That's when I get depressed because I'm like, it's my body being like, hold up, before we commit the next 2 years of our lives to this project, let's just pump the brakes a little bit.
Right.
And then the ambiguity of that can lead to a bit of depression. And usually a big trip will give me some sense of clarity in terms of, I don't think it's like necessarily the right path or anything, but just like a clear path forward. And that's a lot of what life is about, just like having a path forward.
Sure.
and keep moving, whether it's necessarily in you need to reassess things once in a while and maybe take a different direction,
right?
But that's when you keep moving and have like some path forward, that's a lot better than what the fuck do I do right now?
Where am I going? You know? It's funny because I did a solo podcast over Thanksgiving, and I was talking about this Tribe Called Quest song and Keep It Moving. KIM is that's the chorus of the song.
Yeah.
And a lot of the fans were kind of like talking about it online, and I was like, it is probably the best way for me to deal with my personal, because I have pretty bad depression and anxiety, and I go through these massive waves.
Mm.
And Keep It Moving was always kind of this, I love listening to hip hop, old school hip hop, and like kind of upbeat shit when I'm feeling low, like the Flower era of hip hop, the 90s. Yeah. And that song always was like, Keep It Moving was always just this mainstay in my head. So it's very odd that you just said that, because it's become kind of a part of the show of like, Keeping It Moving was always my advice to people when they write in about how they feel depression and how to get through it. Because you realize how many people struggle with shit in life. I think we ignore it all the time. Yeah. We just think everyone's on an equal plane.
Well, there's a lot of social pressure to put on a face and act like bullshit. Everything's going on
I'm totally good. Yeah,
the
phrase, how are you, and you just go, good. It's an innate response that we've taught ourselves socially, but it's not true.
And I actually don't do that. Like, if someone asks me how I'm doing, I tell them the truth. And sometimes my friends, they know that about me, so they're sometimes nervous to ask me how I'm doing. They're like, oh, God, this might be a therapy session.
Yeah.
But the thing is when I tell them things are going good, they know that I mean it, and they're, like, excited for me.
That's wonderful.
And it's a game. I've actually had friends, because I do that, they've started implementing that in their lives, and they're like, yeah, it changes my approach to how I think about things. I don't feel like I'm putting on this facade all the time. I think it's a much healthier way to be. I think a lot of like the corporate and workplace really puts so much pressure on people to be a cheerleader all of the time.
Yeah, and they want you to be happy and healthy and wise and upbeat. And, you know, there's especially like these massive Chinese companies. I mean, have you ever seen these like videos of these Chinese corporations? They indoctrinate their employees with these kind of like songs. They make up like anthems and songs for the company.
Yeah.
So they cheer for the company at the beginning of the day.
It's
the most fucking creepy robotic shit you've ever seen. But that's a part of these massive corporate conglomerate systems, is like you have to keep these people in some kind of order, and we falsify this. We're all happy, right? Because it makes other people feel bad if they're not following suit.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? I'm not in line. But you seem to be somebody we haven't known each other that well for that long. But every time I see you, I'm always happy to see you, and it's always you're a pretty bright light. And I don't know whether that's, obviously now you've said that's not you covering something up. You're actually displaying your real emotions. But when I see you, you seem very bright, and it is always like kind of smiley to see you.
Yeah,
and maybe that's just our connection, but I just feel like you have when I do run into you, you have kind of like a rich feeling about you that's like happy or in a good place.
I mean, for me, because I spend so much time on the road and I'm so isolated in ways which I actually like. I don't. There's a couple of negative emotions that just don't affect me very much. One is jealousy and another is loneliness. Like, I know what they feel like, I experience them, but they just don't drive my behavior. They don't really influence me that much.
Wow.
And I'm grateful for that. There's other things like depression that really severely affect me, but because of that, like, I don't get to see my peers, is, you know, people that are like around the same level or whatever, as much as I'd like to, because I'm not in LA or New York very often outside of like doing some festivals sometimes. And so usually if you see, I'm probably excited to just be like, hey, I get to hang out with like one of the guys that's like, you know, around my level, or you're doing fucking very well for yourself.
Same. But I know what you mean. Like, our peers and
because otherwise you're working with like the local feature host or whatever. Sure. And they're like kissing your ass too much to like, oh, can you take me on tour with you and all of that. And it's not just, you know, it's a different connection with your peers.
Yeah. It's almost like you're, you know, it is hard sometimes that you become kind of like this. You have to be this like this guiding light. Like, you didn't know you signed up for that, but you know that like sometimes they want people below you that you're working with oftentimes want so much help and advice. And I'm usually quick to give it, and I'm cool with it. But sometimes you just want to have regular conversations like you're just people. Because
it's also weird to me when comics are just like, wow, one day, if I could get where that guy is, right, headlining the Chuckle Hut in Toledo, yeah, Ohio, and you, I'm up there like, I'm fucking broke. I hate this. Mm-hmm. And like, you want to be, your dream is to be me, dude?
It is their dream. But that's the crazy thing about this game is like, it's, yeah, I say that lily pad theory. It's like every frog thinks jumping to the next lily pad is going to be more stable than the one.
Yeah,
you're on.
Yeah.
It's not,
yeah,
the case. So you have to start to enjoy the lily pad that you're on.
Yeah.
And you have to try. I mean, fuck, dude. Let's jump backwards. You got invited to Budapest to perform at a festival.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the name of the festival again?
It's called Zora.
Zora. Z-O-R-A.
Oh, Zora.
Oh, Zora.
A-Z-A-Z-O-R-A.
Okay, and then what is it? Does that mean something?
It's the name of the city that it's in. Ah, it's a town, yeah.
That's how dumb I am. I'm so bad with geography.
I am as well.
I don't know that.
I know all of the U.S. very well now because I travel around to it, yeah, all the time. But yeah, so it was a psytrance festival. I hadn't drank in a long time. I had just spent 2 days on a train because these guys were like, that booked me, they're like, hey, do you want to like make a trip out of this and spend a couple days on a train and stop and do this and like really sold it like an adventure,
yeah,
and really it was just like two like 14 hour days on a train, uh-huh, and toward the end I was like, ugh. And I got to this festival, and if you've never heard psytrance music before, it's not just like chill fucking music to like hang out, it is like intense, like, you know, like hard, like dubstep-ish kind of thing would be a closer, yes, analogy.
Yeah.
And like, and it's 24/7, and it's so to give you an idea, my tent, and you're sleeping in a tent, it's like a Burning Man situation. And right, so my tent was like probably close to like a half a mile away from the main stage. And it was still like the ground was like vibrating, and you wake up and the music's such that they put like all these strange sounds in it. I was waking up at like 8 a.m. to like cat screams being mixed into a song. Like, what the fuck? I just went to bed at 5. And so anyhow, I show up there, it's pouring rain, and I know that this is a cool ass festival, but I also know this is going to be a fucking nightmare if I'm sober.
Yeah.
And it's the type of place that I'd normally do some acid or something like that. But I had been taking a break from psychedelics because I had some mental health issues a couple years ago and shooting a documentary about psychedelics called Psychonautics, a comics exploration of psychedelics, Amazon Prime. And
good drop.
And so I was like nervous about, if it would have been in the U.S., I would have done a psychedelic, but I was nervous about doing my first psychedelic in 2 years in a foreign country,
sure,
having another manic episode and getting confused and valid, not being able to know what to do. There's like a, you know, this
I'm far away from
like
home.
40,000 people, and, yeah, and like there's no phone reception. I can't get a hold of people that I'm with. And there's like this very like affable, charming like host guy that's like this Hungarian dude who has like two bottles of Hungarian wine. He's like, hey, you guys want? And I was like, you know what, I will drink some of your wine. It's like, I'm cold, it's loud, this might suck, or I can drink and have a fucking blast.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started drinking again this time around,
and you had a blast.
Haven't regretted it. I've had getting used to drinking again. There's a couple times where I was like, now I'm drinking a little too much. I got to wrangle that in. And,
right,
and especially when your tolerance isn't there yet, then you're just getting hung over like every fucking day. And anytime that you drink. And so it can be like kind of miserable. And so yeah, that's what got me on
back on the train. Yeah, you got to find a balance. I mean, there has to be a balance in all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. We all have to find a balance in life with whatever substance that you're using, because I say you got to be careful with everything that you're doing. Mm-hmm. Was there any moment when you were there that you really wanted to take psychedelics?
Oh, absolutely. The entire time.
You just didn't want, you just were like, I can't.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, better not. Yeah. And
how was the speech? How did that go?
That was great. It was fantastic.
Really attentive.
I mean, it's what I'm trying to transition into is out of traditional stand-up and doing more like have to, like, funny talks.
Sure.
So, like, I have the show that I tour with full time right now is called Stand Up Science. So I have two scientists on each show giving talks about their work, and then I have a second comic, and so it's half comedy sets, half science talks, and it allows me to the opportunity to just be like, hey, I can just stand up here and share this really interesting idea and thing that I learned for like 5 minutes without it having to be funny or with it, like, you know, I'll have like a punchline at the end or something like that, but it's okay that I just talked for 5 minutes and people were really interested.
Right.
And that's what I want my career to be, and that's what I'm trying to transit. I have a science podcast called Here We Are, where I interview scientists weekly about their work, and so that's the sort of stuff I am trying to do. I'm doing a psychedelic version of stand-up science called Head Talks that I just started doing. Days. As well. And
you got it
so,
all. You're spinning a million fucking plates.
I am.
And you're not and even I'm, living. You're, there's, I'm doing you're living on the road.
3 to 4 cities a week. And holy part of shit. Part of the mission of it is because I don't think like what I'm doing is the most novel thing in the world in terms of like, say this were like a monthly show in LA or New York or something like that, it wouldn't be like the most groundbreaking. Like, you know, LA and New York have tons of amazing, unique, interesting sure. shows, and but what's different about what I'm doing is I'm taking things to like Wichita, Kansas and stuff like that where people don't have any, you know, there's a bunch of like really smart people that are in like you know, red states that don't get to like hear science talks and don't get sure. exposure to stuff like that. And so I try to find the cities that are kind of underserved in terms of intelligent entertainment, and they
and
come
target
out
them.
And I target them and they come out and it's been going really well.
That's awesome. Well, I learned, like, I went down to Huntsville, Alabama to play a single show down there. Fucking NASA's there. So it's like, yeah. Alabama has this rap of being kind of a country bumpkin place, and yeah. it is, so to speak. It's a lot of small towns.
Yeah.
But then you also realize a lot of the people that came out to my show were fucking like nerd, like dorks. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. These NASA kids want something to do, so they go to a comedy club, because comedy clubs tend to be this kind of transference of ideas. And depending on the comedian who's presenting them, you can get some funny, witty, sharp, intellectual comedy. Because I feel like they need that in a place where they're kind of devoid of,
yeah,
you know, I no offense, but a little bit of culture. I mean, they're in the middle of Huntsville is not a big fucking place.
I mean, I don't think any of your listeners yeah. would be like, why are you talking shit about Huntsville?
Yeah, but I just feel
I
like,
mean,
you
it's
know,
usually, I think it's usually people are surprised to hear that, like, people are like, well, how do your shows do in the South? You have a science show that you They do better than anywhere.
Yeah, they love
it. Like in LA and New York, people are like, whatever. I could see a science talk any night of the week. And it's understandable. You right. know, there's just a billion options for people. And
it's like Vegas. There's too much to do in cities like this.
Yeah.
And then you go to other places, they're appreciative you're there. They're like, fuck, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
A guy in San Antonio said that. He goes, will you come back? I said, yeah, probably. I'm here now. Like,
right.
And he goes, yeah, but people don't come back. And I want you to come back. And I was like, I guess we forget. We're so kind of privileged when you do get to live in cities like LA or New York or Chicago or whatever, that's like thriving. And they've got all of this shit going on, that when you go to a place that doesn't have, it's not nothing, but it doesn't have as much, they kind of hold on to things more. You know what I mean? They're excited more. They're like, yeah, motherfucker, I'm happy that you're here.
Yeah.
Here we're brats. They're spoiled fucking brats. At any given night of the week at the Comedy Store, the $20 they paid for to get in, the lineup there is worth like $5,000.
Yeah.
And they still complain.
Yeah,
like
it's
fucking crazy how spoiled they are. So it's nice to, I like
just
going to these places.
Arms crossed. Like, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. Come on, babe. You want to go somewhere else? Yeah. That is the inherent problem. So you're living on the road right now. We said that before the show, we were talking. You don't have a place right now. You're on the move.
My last place was Portland. Went through a breakup in April, and at the time I was trying to plan out my girlfriend at the time wanted to take a break from work for a year and come live on the road with me for a year and travel around. So I was lining all of that up. So like, how do I make that work logistically? And it's something that I've wanted to do since I did this indie tour about psychedelics called A Good Trip. That was like this 111 city tour. I did that in 2016 to 2017, and everyone thought I was crazy for doing it. Before I did it, I was like, this might be crazy. And when I did it, I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. This is exactly what I want to be doing all of the time.
Wow.
Like, and that was the first time that I put all my stuff in storage for 9 months and just lived on the road. And I didn't know what it was going to be like. And I was like, this is what I want.
111 and, cities?
Yeah. And
dude, holy shit, Shane, that's insane.
I know.
I mean, do you also take some time for yourself? Like, you, I mean, because when you're working like that, like, do you also kind of need some recovery, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was, that tour, there was times when I was doing like six cities a week pretty regularly.
God
and
damn, dude.
And now I do, and there's even like, I think I did like 21 cities in a row or something like that in like 21 days or something. And I try to do three a week.
Yeah.
So I have Smart. 4 days off and it's spread out a
take
little
a
bit.
Take a fucking break, man. Holy shit. How do you get from gig to gig?
I mean, I can take a break anytime I want to. So like I'll go through Wisconsin where I'm from originally.
Yeah.
And my parents are still in my hometown as well as my sister.
What hometown?
My brother-in-law,
what is it?
La Crosse, Wisconsin. It's on the border of Minnesota
La Crosse,
and Iowa.
Baby. Yeah.
It's right in between Madison and Minneapolis. And then my brother's in Milwaukee. And then I have just tons of old friends in like Minneapolis and Madison. So I'll sometimes like just take a month off to hang out around there
cool.
and
you need
get
it.
Some family time and stuff like that. So, I mean, and sometimes sometimes I'll just be like, I'll also plan it out. So if I'm like, this might be too much time alone for a person to spend and still be a healthy person. So I'll just like book one of my comic friends to come along on tour with me for a couple weeks or something. Like Mike Kaplan did it recently.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
Good fit for a science-y show.
He's New York?
Yeah,
New York, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of a maybe nerdier, more cerebral comedian.
Sure, sure.
And so great fit for it.
Yeah, that's cool. You get to stopping over in the Midwest is kind of nice to have that kind of, you know, as a Chicago guy, it's like whenever I'm anywhere near the fucking Midwest, I'm like, I got to go home. Like, coincidentally, I'm playing at the end of the month, at the end of January, I'm doing Madison and Minnesota. And because of it, I'm like, I have to go home. It's almost like there's that magnet to go home when I'm in the Midwest. I'm like, I have to stop by.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, I feel like I'll feel bad. I was like, I was so close. I should. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's pretty cool. My mom's side of the family is all still in kind of the same hometown, but my dad's side is spread out all over the country. And they never see each other. And they're now like trying really hard to make a point to like, we got to have a get together. Like, once a year to
right.
hang out with
one everybody's
another
dying.
And stuff.
That's what happens.
But I get to see my family like four times a year, spaced out. You know, I'm seeing them like every few months or so. Sometimes it's just for like 2 days, and just because of the way my routing is,
enough.
I gotta keep moving. But yeah,
how many days do you fucking want?
Yeah. It's
two,
it's
two
often
three days,
good
and
enough.
I'm like, I gotta get out of it. Wait, how are you getting from place to place to place?
Driving.
So are you renting a car, just renting and renting and renting?
I was doing that for a while, and now I have everything sorted out so that I'm driving almost everywhere. I drove to California. Mountain time zone is like, there's just like nothing in terms of gigs there. There's like Colorado,
Denver.
You got a little Arizona and stuff like that, but especially up north in Montana and stuff, there's nothing.
Yeah.
So beautiful expanse to drive through, but if you're just like by yourself, you don't want to drive like 20 hours for nothing. And so I flew in here and I have a rental car right now, and I often do that when I'm touring the West Coast. But other than that, most of my stuff is Central Time Zone and Eastern Time Zone, and I'm just kind of making loops around. My show Stand Up Science is a different show every single time that I do it.
Wow.
It's all different. It's two different scientists in every city, which if you're wondering if that's hard to find two different scientists, four cities a week, it is. It's very time consuming.
It's extremely hard, I imagine.
I have a full-time assistant who helps me out with things. And,
yeah.
I can barely even prepare for the shows. It's so like I know what the topics are and the gist of what they're going to be talking about. And I have a broad knowledge of lots of different subjects from doing my science podcast for 5 years. But a lot of times I'm just kind of winging it, and I'm thinking about what they're going to be. And I kind of like choose some material that I have that's related. And then I watch the talk and then I improvise. And so I'm starting to learn to improvise a lot for the first time in my career. I mean, I always
improvise
like,
with scientists is something you thought you'd never do.
Yeah.
Huh? Isn't that fucking wild?
Oh man. When I started, because for people that, you know, I'm a blue collar guy. I didn't go to college. I was like a factory worker and stuff. So
did you work in a factory?
I was a and I was a terrible student and everything else. So now skip forward. And when I started comedy, I would I wasn't much of a reader or anything else.
Now
skip
you're fraternizing with fucking scientists.
I talk with at least like 8 scientists a week.
Yeah. Wow. What factory did you work in?
The longest job that I had was Ashley Furniture Factory in Arcadia, Wisconsin. But I also worked there for like 4 years, I want to say. And then
Putting together furniture?
Making parts for furniture mostly. But I did a little assembly line work. Sure. I did a little bit of everything.
You moved around, man.
You moved around a little bit, yeah.
Shane's doing good. Yeah. Move him up to assembly. Not just a shipping guy, dude. He's good.
And I had this is fun. My first factory job, I worked in a crouton factory. I worked in a crouton factory.
Wait.
I love telling people that because people, like when I first told someone that I worked in a crouton factory, I didn't know that was funny.
Yeah,
I had
hilarious.
No idea, and then everyone's just like, what the fuck?
You're a fucking comedian. That's hilarious. Because according to America, as far as I'm concerned, croutons just like happen. Like,
No one knows that they get made.
I feel like croutons are just like, they're out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Like I feel like they made a billion of them in the 70s, and they just, they had enough, you know what I mean, to last for the rest of the time. That's it. We're full on croutons. We'll never run out.
Well, the people I was working with, I think that might be half true. Yeah. I worked third shift in a crouton factory with a bunch of like real degenerates. I was drunk most of the time I was working.
Attaboy.
If you're going to eat a crouton, know that there's some degenerate factory worker that's been dipping their hands in those croutons and gobbling some.
Did you eat croutons every day?
I ate croutons every day.
That's so funny.
It's funny. I don't even like bread. But if you turn it into a crouton, I can eat that shit.
Bread and crouton
are
just cousins. They're
not the
same thing.
Especially with some alcohol.
Oh my God.
They should, instead of pretzels, they should have a little thing of croutons.
Shane, you just fucking... I'm opening a bar and that's going to be the first thing I do.
The crouton?
Yeah, fuck.
Is that the name of the bar?
Yeah, the crouton.
Yeah.
because the bowl of pretzels is gross for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
The croutons would be fun to pick at.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm stealing your idea. Come to the crouton. We're going to open up in 2021. But the first drink I'll make will
that
be called the Shane Moss.
Our idea.
I wouldn't
have thought of it without your help.
So. But I'll give you royalty, all right?
Yeah,
how about that?
No problem. Take it. Go.
Okay, it's mine?
I want you to have that crouton
okay,
money. You deserve it. You've worked hard.
You know what's so funny?
I've had enough good things happen to me in my life. You go get that crouton money.
Thank you,
money.
Dude. You're going to be somewhere in Cincinnati. You'll be sitting having coffee in the morning. You read the paper like... Andrew Santino's crouton business exploding across the country. Everyone's
the man who made croutons sexy again.
Yeah.
I came up with that idea.
I brought back croutons. And the bartender's like, sure you did, pal. Everybody knows Santino's the crouton guy. So you worked at a crouton factory.
Yeah.
That was the other longest stint.
I also did, I did close to a year... making parts for like, it's a lot of like small, it was a small machine shop, but they made little parts for helicopters and stuff. They made a lot of military contracts.
Shit? Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. And
that's good money to have, man. That'll always be there.
I mean, it is weird to like have seen that experience of like, man, these are the people that are making parts for fucking helicopters.
Dude, I think about that all the time.
War.
Yep.
Like, you know, it's...
I know what you're saying.
These guys are like... There's a lot of... In factory work, there's a lot of like piece rate stuff. So you're getting paid per the number of units that you're putting out. So, you know, you're kind of...
You're shuffling through
it. Some stuff slide a little bit.
This isn't the Ferrari factory, dude. Yeah. No one's going over it with a fine-tooth comb. This is like, click, 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 go. I mean, when I watch those documentaries about factory work, it's fascinating to me because of like...
It's brutal, man.
Not only is it fucking crazy working conditions for the most part, and most people are treated completely unfairly and it's gross. It's so hard to have an attention to detail because it's monotonous, right? It's almost mind-numbing.
I don't know why they don't have, like, they don't, like, hire Buddhists to work in factories. Like, you guys like meditation? You like not thinking about shit?
This is it.
Enjoy the, they're out there. Buddhists are out there like cutting blades of grass to be like, instead of using a lawnmower, we're going to cut things with scissors because the practice of doing the... No, motherfucker, get in a factory and like put some furniture together.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, but you're contributing. Yeah. You're actually doing something.
It's like the plates in the prison. You know, they stamp plates in prison all the time. Like it's the same, you know, well, I don't even they do that anymore, but California states used to stamp license plates.
Oh,
it's like that's the most mind-numbing.
That's still happening.
There's nothing to it. It's just do. It's like three steps.
It's brutal. And some people, it was just like they could get in the mindset of just like, you know, I love it. It's relaxing. Right. And there was a thing about like the peace rate thing does do an interesting thing to the mind. Whereas instead of like looking at the clock, like you're in class, like when is this going to be over? Is it you're like fighting against the clock. So you're like, oh shit, an hour's already gone by. I haven't like turned out enough stuff. Like, oh, the day's almost over. I haven't finished my... So, you know, and that's part of the reason why meth is such an issue in rural communities now because of that very thing.
Yep.
But
because it's an escape from the monotony. It's an escape from the same old over and over. And it also gives you a little bit of life in something that you might not be enjoying to do. I'm not saying use meth, but I'm saying if you work in a factory, I wouldn't fucking, I wouldn't blame you.
I had a guy on my podcast that wrote a book about meth use in the Appalachian region and breaking down like why it's such a thing. And that's a big contributor.
It's huge up there.
There's a lot of like, you know, factory work's being phased out by robots.
Yeah.
You're like, the Mexicans are taking all,
The Mexican robots are taking over our jobs.
Are like, if anything, a stopgap to like, they're just like a slight little, like,
right.
They're going to be out of work soon too. It's just robot.
Yeah, like, it's robots.
And if you think you're going to stop that, you aren't.
No.
Like, there's nothing you're going to do against that. And why are you trying to hold on to that job? It's the worst job imaginable. but there's that and there, you know, to be able to stay and do that job, there's more and more demands being put on people and they're getting paid less. And so you have meth can have like a little bit of a euphoria attached to it. Mm-hmm. And now you can 12-hour day. Now you just work some overtime.
Right.
It was zipped by.
Like that. Yeah.
And you're putting more food on the table. It's a very inexpensive product. And then you know, you have a source and then all your coworkers are like, hey buddy, what's your secret? And then you break off a little meth for them, and now they're getting meth from you, and now you're like, I'm making more off this meth than I was. And so now you're a meth dealer, and then in the Appalachian region, there's like a lot of tree cover, and so helicopters can't find stuff as much. It's easier to hide a meth lab, and then there's also a lot of agricultural chemicals that would normally raise some red flags that
not
are great
there.
For
you. Right.
And so there's just like, it's just everything prime perfect.
For it. Yeah. It's prime for that kind of condition.
Yeah.
That usually happens with drugs.
I get it. I've done Adderall sometimes here and there. And I have emergency Adderall for when I need to make like a 10-hour drive or something like that.
Right.
But I get it. Fortunately, I don't like speed or I'd probably do it. But
I'm an opposite drug user. I like depressants. I don't like uppers.
I've never liked uppers. Yeah,
they give me the
too.
Fucking creeps. And I also, I don't like the way it makes me feel.
Yeah.
So I've always been, you know, marijuana, alcohol. I tend to like levelers or depressants and alcohol, but or like mood levelers or stabilizers, things that will increase blood flow to the brain, but which in turn slows you down a lot. You know what I mean? Like with weed, I'm slow on weed, dude. I am your typical, stereotypical, like I smoke pot and I land the plane. Like I am just very low key. A lot of people smoke pot and it turns them up and turns them on.
That's
the
like
opposite.
Dabbers, though.
Yeah.
Dabbers
well, dude, but that's what's happening
crazy.
Now. It's
but
fucking
that's
nuts.
Like the crack of cannabis.
But that's what it is now, dude. I was talking about it on the show. There's a woman, this woman dabbing granny. I reached out to her. She's probably going to do the podcast. She's this famous YouTuber out of Denver. Dude, She smokes man, an
I'm on the
amount.
Same show that Dabin Granny did.
Yeah, baby.
Well, my status I'm fascinated just shot
with
up
I'm fascinated
bit.
With the amount that people can use because I just simply cannot do
I
it.
Mean, I know there's a friend of mine in the Portland area and he
consumes.
I remember one time we were playing some. I'm a big board gamer, and I was teaching a board, and he's pretty good at board games, and like gets it usually pretty quickly, and I was explaining this board game to the group, and he's just like not following it, and it's like getting irritated, and I'm like, dude, you smoke too many dabs, like what the fuck, and he's like. I haven't done a dab in a while. And then went, smoked a dab, and then he could understand the
wow.
game. Like it's just like that.
That's a
why
bad
it's
place
the
to be, by
that's
the
a
way.
Bad place to be. I do not recommend dabbing.
It's the irony is that
I'm not a big cannabis guy anyway, but I'm pro cannabis. Go
yeah,
get out
go
there
do it.
If you're in hey, suit
well,
yourself.
That, I think the irony is when we were using when I first started smoking oh my God, 20 some odd years ago. And I've been using pot for that many years, you know, on and off, up and down, sometimes more than others. And I take massive breaks. Pot to me is kind of like what you said about liquor. Like I will go 6 months without smoking pot.
Yeah,
I didn't
want
to smoke a joint. But I always kind of consumed it in such small amounts because that's what I enjoyed. It was like a couple of hits on a patio with my friend. And that was that. And then I would go have a couple of drinks, couple of, you know, cups of sauce. And that was my level that I liked. Now, you know, all these other drugs are you know, labeled as the most dangerous things on earth. And crazily enough, people consume so much marijuana that I'm like, that's becoming dangerous. Not I'm not saying it's going to kill you, but I'm saying it's going to fucking, it's just like stunting any kind of mental work.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
it bears you down. When you get that high, you're not functioning anymore.
Turning
you know?
Anything into a concentrate, and this is from a guy who has a fondness for DMT, which is a concentrate and
yeah.
one of the most powerful psychedelics on earth.
But you don't use it every day.
Oh, no.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. But people smoke pot like this all day, every day.
But yeah, so you turn anything into a concentrate and you're just fucking with the system. I mean, this is why, you know, like cocaine, for example,
yeah.
This is our hunter-gatherer ancestors were chewing on cocoa leaves.
Yeah,
just
to get by,
and something they do daily, and was like drinking a cup of coffee, or I don't know if you've ever heard of cacao.
Yeah, of course.
Fantastic, so much better than coffee. It's like a little more euphoric. It's like we should have. I believe it's illegal, which is so ridiculous. But
not everywhere, by the way.
Oh.
I watched a thing about this. It's not illegal all over the. It's not illegal everywhere, but for the most part, here it is
in the U.S.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant.
Yeah, no. But many stuff. Places, it's not illegal. It's completely
yeah.
normal. Yeah,
and it is. It's like a regular thing to have every day, and it's not probably. But you know, then you figure out how to turn that stuff into a concentrate, and then also a lot of times, what you've done is extract some other properties. Of the that have like unknown effects, like everyone's like, oh, cannabis is THC is the active ingredient. It's like, well, yeah, that's true, but it's also what they call like an entourage effect, where there's lots of other like these terpenes. That's why there's like
right.
indica and sativa and those sorts of like why would there be different kinds of weed if it was just THC? Why would there be any variance in effect whatsoever? And it's because there's these other things mixing in tandem with it. And so that's what you're like also doing when you take an extract, when you do dabs, when you do cocaine or whatever, you're potentially taking out these other properties that were useful. And then you're getting way too much of like the one thing. And
I find that so crazy that people love to do it.
It is, man.
It's wild.
Anti-dab and people get fucking defensive.
People get mad. Yeah.
Too.
People get it. Well, cause they love that shit, dude. Well, I think a lot of people like to, I got an argument with a buddy about why I like drinking and, you know,
this
everyone,
is fantastic, by the way. I'm having
like,
a little more than I thought I was.
You have
going
as much as
to.
You want,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah.
You're a grown up. But I love this shit because I think it. I think I have better control and balance over liquor than I ever had over any drug.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been, you know, I've had some really fucking bad and good experiences on drugs, and with liquor, I almost always knew what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of times on drugs, I didn't know what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. With this, I know. I drink four more of these things, I know what the fuck is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hit my wife, I'm going to burn the house, and I'm going to kill the dog. And that's what I do.
Yeah, and the and the dog and the wife know it's coming.
That's
so
what they
get. They signed
and
up
that's
for
what
the package.
They fucking know. But I think I've always had more control on liquor, which is why I liked it so much. And with drugs, you know, I've just never had good control over drugs. I really haven't. And I also don't have good control when I do drugs. Mm-hmm. I want to do a lot of them. That's
a
bad thing, too.
Do you fucks with psychedelics? Because psychedelics are a real mixed bag.
Well, yeah. You know, like I'm going to do mushrooms at the end of the month. But I just feel like I like to plan it
and then
get prepared for it and then do it. Because when I took drugs on a whim, when I would take psychedelics, and when I say drugs, like I didn't do a ton of different stuff. I've tried a pretty fair amount of shit.
Yeah.
But when I would take psychedelics on a whim, it was never good for my pattern of behavior, right? Mm. Like I would take as many as I can, and I'd be like, let's see what happens. And then I would end up somewhere where I don't belong. And you know what I mean? I float a little bit too free when I'm on psychedelics, when I'm on drugs.
Yeah, we're comedians. You know?
Yeah, dude.
We float a little too
And then
free.
At some point, you're like, I also have to be a big boy sometimes. Yeah, like, that's my thing is I think when I was younger, I would get so, like, me and my buddy Tyler, one time we took a bunch of mushrooms and went to a haunted house. And it's like, and on the way there, I remember before we started tripping, because we ate them and then left. And I was like, it'll be just enough time that by the time we get there, we're going to be tripping. And I remember on the way there, like 10 minutes from, and I was like, why are we going to a haunted house? Like in the middle of a field, in the middle of like in Western Illinois, I was like, why am I doing this? Is a stupid idea. And the moment we like are about to arrive, me and him turn to each other and we're both like, we're kicking. And I was like, I should not. I'm way too ripped to be in a haunted house.
If you've never done a psychedelic before.
Yeah.
And you're like, what would be like a weird, crazy thing to do on psychedelics? Like, I could see Haunted House coming up on your list. So that's a neat idea.
16 or something. But the reality of it is it's a terrible idea.
It's a therapeutic, meditative experience.
Yeah. But in high school, you're like, how can I get away from my parents? How can I get ripped? You know, I did mushrooms at concerts a bunch. I loved going to concerts and doing mushrooms because it was like, I love the adventure. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, one time, this is a wild story. One time, we were drinking a little bit at my buddy's house, who now has passed away, sadly. And we were smoking weed on the train and going to this concert. And they had a little bit of mushrooms left, and I was like, I'll take it. Like, I'll take the rest of whatever's left. No one wanted it. I was like, I'll take it. I didn't anticipate it, but I'd already been kind of, I was already a little fucked up. And we get there, and me and my buddy had only bought general admission. And our friends had bought floor tickets, like on the floor. And I was like, we're getting on the floor. We're going to figure out a way to get on the floor. Well, I learned that it was in Chicago at the UIC Pavilion. The only difference was these bracelets, these bullshit bracelets. And I was like, that's the only way to get down there. Well, we just need to get somebody to clip a bracelet, hand it up to us, and we can sneak down there. Because if they're already there, we're good.
Right.
We have them sneak these bracelets. We go down, it all works, then we get stopped. Like, we get stopped, and my buddy doesn't have a bracelet, and I'm like, they forgot to give us our bracelets. We're down here. They let us down here, but they said it was good because we had this ticket stub. We had the fake stubs, and they pulled us aside, and the cops were coming. They separated me and my buddy. We're in high school. I'm ripped out of my head on mushrooms, weed, and I'm liquored the fuck up. I probably reek like alcohol because when you're in high school, you're like, glug, 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 you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not like, I'll have a sip. You fucking chug a bottle on the train. And I'm arguing with a police officer over why I deserve to be on the floor because they fucked up and didn't give me a bracelet. And my buddy, I remember my friend was with another cop sitting there silently just shaking his head. And I could tell he was like, Santino's going to get us put in jail. Like he was like, he's going to get us put in jail for sure.
Yeah.
Sure enough, I feed my bullshit story. The cop walks over to my buddy, grabs one of the employees. They give us bracelets and he's like, get the fuck out of here. And we got to go down and party. And I was it was like one of those wonderful moments where I was like, I can't believe it worked. They should have busted us. Yeah. I should have been fucked. And sure enough, I was so happy. The first song came on, and I've never done this since, but I crowd surfed. I was like, put me up. And I got crowd surfed to the front, and it was the best feeling on mushrooms to have people push you around a crowd. I get why people do it.
Because
it was wonderful, man. It was so free and fun, and they pushed me around for like maybe 2 minutes straight. It was awesome.
I once the weirdest crowd surf that I ever had.
Yeah.
I went to, mind you, I mean, obviously you're going to know this was for a joke, but I went to the new Vanilla Ice.
No, no, you love Vanilla Ice. Don't pretend. Don't pretend, Shane, like you don't love Vanilla Ice.
This is like 18 years ago. Vanilla Ice tried to get into the heavy metal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. He had a heavy metal.
Ice, game. Ice, baby! That's awesome. It was so crazy.
That's awesome.
And
where was this at, by
the way? It was in La Crosse, Wisconsin, at this like really fucking run down, barely hanging on theater, and there was like 200 people. It was like such a bad turnout. And
for a guy that used to sell millions of tickets.
Yeah, and I was like, fuck it, this, I'm going to get on stage. I'm going to jump in the crowd. I'm still going to crowd surf at heavy metal
Vanilla Ice.
And it was fucking hilarious.
It was awesome, wasn't it, though? Yeah. It feels good to crowd surf.
In here, we pour whiskey.
Are you a black sheep in your family? God knows I am. Been outcasted my whole life. I am the outcast, and being the black sheep is not that big of a deal. It comes with some perks. It can be kind of cool. When you get older, you're like, yeah, I stand out. This stuff stands out. This is Screwball Whiskey. If you've never had it, try it. It is very, very good. Muy bueno, as we say here in Southern California. Screwball Whiskey, the peanut butter kind. It's got peanut butter whiskey, man. It is delicious. You put it on the rocks. You can have it neat. Take a shot of it. I suggest putting it with some vanilla ice cream. That was my favorite intonation of this. I also had it in some coffee, and it made my day so much better. But you got to drink it responsibly. I wasn't getting behind the wheel. Like I always say, don't drink and drive. I don't like that stuff. But I do like this stuff. Screwball Whiskey is delicious. Made here in Ocean Beach, California. That's where it was conceived and invented. The owner of this delicious, palatable whiskey has survived some tough, tough times. And he came to make this, introduce it as restaurant in OB, and push it out to everybody. And I got to tell you, it's very, very good. It's smooth. It's clean. It's crisp. It's not overwhelming. Go to screwballwhiskey.com if you want a bunch more info. It's available all over the map. It's 70 proof, so it kicks it into full gear. Please drink this stuff responsibly. It's worth every little drop. Put it on something delicious. Make it even more delicious. Who doesn't like to add peanut butter to stuff, okay? Get yourself a bowl of chocolate. Melt it. Throw this in there. Sip it. Sip it. Go get yourself a bottle of Screwball Whiskey and enjoy that stuff. Whiskey Ginger fans, make 2020 a year where you explore new skills. Deepen your existing passions, man. Get lost in creativity. Go into the depths of your mind. Find out what inspires you, dude. I do really believe in continuing to learn as we grow older. I think we need to continue to exercise our brain. One of those ways is to get online learning communities. Millions of people can come together. To create these creative journeys as one. And there's thousands of classes available. I'm talking about Skillshare. If you've never been on Skillshare, I do highly recommend it. All joking aside, it's a learning community. It offers membership with meaning. There's tons of classes to explore, something that can help you accomplish real growth in things that you're really looking forward to learning, you know, with a bunch of other people that are in the same boat. An annual subscription is less than 10 bucks a month. That's a joke. You spend more on coffee and bagels. Do yourself a favor and go check it out because I've gone on the site. I've had some fun there, and I'm trying to re-up myself in the Skillshare learning. I'm trying to take more classes on there to try to just, you know, get my brain up again because we get lully brains. You know, we get sloppy lully brains, and they're a very proud sponsor of the Whiskey Ginger Show, so we like them. Please support the people that support us. Go there, check it out, whether you're into very artistic, creative stuff, whether you're into writing. I like a lot of the creative writing stuff. That's kind of what tickled my fancy. They may not be for you. There's a ton of classes that you can choose from. But go to skillshare.com/whiskey. Get 2 months free of premium membership. That's pretty amazing. That's 2 entire months of unlimited access to thousands of classes all for free when you go to skillshare.com/whiskey. Once again, that's skillshare.com/whiskey.
Ginger. I like gingers.
Have you ever been to a metal show before? Like a hardcore, like a heavy metal show?
I think when I was a teenager, I went to like, you know, tagged along with a friend. Oh, Static X.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. That's old school.
Yeah, before they were huge.
Oh, really? This is before they made it, man. I found them first.
People are like, so that's still within that time frame? Like, that yeah. always?
Yeah, yeah.
Before they've made it?
You mean all the time? Yeah.
Mean all the time.
You mean that's just how they were?
Yeah, at a place, now that you mention it, a place called The Warehouse in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Is that still there? Like, why does that sound familiar?
I believe it still might.
It's a music venue, right? Well, there's a place called The Warehouse in Wisconsin that I thought.
I think it still is.
Yeah, it sounds so familiar.
And it's pretty small. I think you could, I think you could do like 180 standing room only, like mosh pit style.
That's cool, but venues are so fun, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, the intimate ones I really love.
And
man.
I think that's the only, but I've never been a big going to live music guy until in my adult life that I wanted to more. And
really?
Now, and, you know, we work weekends and everything. And
I'm
so
the opposite
harder.
For some reason. Huh. I went a ton as a kid. And now I'm kind of like, I don't know if I have the time.
Yeah, I think my first big concert was Weezer.
It's a great show. I've seen
great
Weezer.
Show.
Great
yeah.
show. Yeah, they're yeah. awesome.
And then my next big concert was White Stripes.
Oh, that's good
so,
too.
Yeah, fantastic.
You picked two good ones.
Yeah, that was
Did
a
you
good
ever go
start.
To Alpine Valley?
Uh-uh.
Do you know Alpine Valley?
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
We would go up there. It used to be called the Tweeter Center.
Yeah.
That was when I was in high school. That's where we'd go. That's a outdoor amphitheater in Wisconsin that we'd go up to go see massive shows. They would have what was the pot concert, like Rolling Loud? No, not Rolling Loud. That's new. I can't remember what the Heavy Days or whatever the bullshit. Mm-hmm. They always put like one of the pothead terminology on a hip hop concert because they're like, that's who comes, kids that smoke weed, and they're right, and that's exactly who goes.
Yeah,
did you ever go to jam band
it's
shows?
It's smart.
Yeah.
To be like, we already got like the African American community coming here.
Yeah.
Let's get some like.
Let's get suburban whites.
Suburban white
let's get
kids
suburban
here.
Whites.
Make it like a pot thing.
Yeah, let's stir it up. Did you ever go to jam band shows?
I went to Fish was the last big concert that I went to. And I'm not, I don't dislike Fish. I'm just not like a.
You're not
a fish head,
dude.
And
people fucking love that band.
Yeah, so one of my best friends, it's his favorite band. He's always going on and on, and it's not again like
sure.
I'm never going to put it on in my car, but whenever it's on, I'm like, oh, I like
yeah,
this.
It's
I like
cool.
that this is
I'll
on.
I'll tune in sometimes. I have friends that love that shit.
And I went, and he was like, but it's a whole experience to go to these things, and. And so I went in, let's see, that would have been 2018, yeah, just a little over a year ago, a year and a half ago.
And you liked it, though.
I enjoyed it. There was,
it sounds like you did it.
Well,
it was okay.
I had a bunch of drugs stolen out of my tent.
Oh, shit. Here's the story. Tell the fucking, what happened.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of tents set up and stuff. It was like there's a bunch of us friends out there. There's a bunch of Wisconsin people that live in Oregon for some reason, or maybe it was just my friend group out there.
I get the parallel. I get it.
And yeah,
it's a similar culture in rural Wisconsin to rural Oregon.
Yeah, outside of my main friend group there, there was also just like tons of other like friends from high or just people from high school that I'd bump into out there, and yeah, similar vibe, I guess. And then. It was, so we, a bunch of us got a big lot and had tents set up and everything else and came back from one of the shows, one of the nights, and all my drugs were gone. And at
Damn.
The time, because I had some mental health issues a year earlier, I had like mood stabilizers and stuff like that. And which I wasn't on at the time. I just had them in case like psychedelics backfired on me or whatever. And they took my fucking like mood stabilizers. It's like, dude, like first off, that's not a thing that you want to do.
Yeah, that's
at
not
all.
Something that someone should take.
Yeah,
unless you need them.
Yeah, not at all. And then also, like, what if I would have been on them regularly at the moment? What if it would have been heart medication or anything? I mean, I did have like Also in that, like lots of other
fun drugs.
But it's just like, what a fucking dickhead thing to do, because also the prescription things were separate. And then there was also some So there's nitrous tanks around.
Oh, yeah. I've done nitrous.
And there was like nitrous tanks wars going on. I guess it's like incredibly profitable to sell nitrous. So like when people like go around to these fish shows and there was like some like racial nitrous tank war stuff going on. It was pretty fucking
when you say racial,
crazy.
I don't know what you mean because everybody at Fish is white.
Yeah, so there's like some black guys getting into selling nitrous at Fish and like crowding in some of the territory, and then there was like some white dudes that were just like fucking up random black people that weren't even associated with the nitrous just to like send a fucking message. I couldn't believe it.
This is like the prison
this is
system.
Fucking fish. Yeah.
This like, is a fish
this
show,
is
right?
Like peace, love, all the fucking hippiest shit. It's like it was so disappointing. Yeah. But you know, I guess that's what money will do to anybody.
Fuck yeah. That's the problem, right? Isn't that why Burning Man, there's no money out there? Isn't that whole thing? You just trade shit all the time?
Yeah,
you
know I haven't been to Burning Man.
I keep hearing about it.
I was supposed to go. I had my big, like, psychological break, like, right before the Burning Man that I was, like, I was going to, like, one of the camps there was, like, going to, like, get me there, put me up, take care of all my needs, and they can't, like, pay you to be there, but they can, you know, like
take care of you,
take care of you. And so it was like this really terrific opportunity, and so I was going to go, and I had some issues arise, ended up in a psych ward at some point.
You did? Do you want to talk about it or no?
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Well, what happened? What was the psychedelic break?
I was shooting a documentary about psychedelics, and so I was doing more than I normally would have, and I was also going like real hard on the paint, trying to have like bigger experiences.
Give me scale.
I mean, I was doing mushrooms like 3 or 4 times a week for like a few months.
What do you take in one sitting?
Like 4 to 10 grams.
Dude, I got criticism on one of the podcasts I did because I said 4 to 5 grams is a significant, it's a good amount of fucking mushrooms.
It's actually what you should be doing.
Really?
I mean, honestly.
I don't, I only, a couple grams is good for me.
Yeah, but that's so.
But you're for an experienced user, it's different, right? For a novice, don't you think you take less?
No.
You say go for it.
Yeah, there's actually, so there's.
All right. Well, I will.
Of the researchers,
I'm
going to
take 10 at the end of the month.
I'm fine with. I'm fine with you doing that.
You're prescribing it to me.
Yeah,
Dr. Moss.
I am, and I don't think psychedelics are for everybody. And
I love them.
I don't tell everyone that they should do them, but there is. I am like I really couldn't encourage the big dose more. It was just where I fucked up was not allowing time to integrate. So my brain was just like building those connections, and some of those connections were just starting to take hold because it was just every other day. That's what the problem was.
So it was just so it was like a constant barrage. Something needs a break.
Yeah, I mean it's not anything that no person would have a inclination to do psychedelics as often as that, but I was just trying to tap into the experience to figure out ways of articulating it for the documentary and come up with like what the visuals might look like and everything else. And it was low budget. We had a short amount of time to do it, and so I was just like really pushing it. And I was also kind of trying to show like, you know, backfired on me, but I was trying to show like other people think like, you know, these things make you crazy or whatever. I'll do such an insane amount of them, and I'll still be fine. Like, watch, and then.
Yeah, I mean, you are fine subsequently, but you did. What was the moment that? What was the moment that pushed it over the edge?
Ayahuasca was what like really got the manic ball rolling, and then.
I mean, that shit is kind of dangerous for the brain, don't you think?
No.
And I mean dangerous in terms of like if you're not secure with oneself, I feel like you can slip away a little bit.
Mm.
You don't think so?
If you're doing it in the right set and setting.
That's basically the problem is I think a lot of people don't have the opportunity to do things correctly.
I think if you know the right place and you're going to
and you like, with the right people.
Like I was just on my Head Talks show, I was just doing this I had my guest anthropologist for a few of the shows with this anthropologist or my guest scientist. Was this anthropologist Sophia Rocklin, who lives most of the time in Peru, wrote a book about Peru, When Plants Dream. Shout out to her. She's awesome. Great communicator. And she works at a place called Temple of the Way of Light in Peru. And so there's all these shady things down there. But if you find the right one, go down there. And I mean, they screen you ahead of time. So they'll let you know if it's not for you. But I would say that your average person, if you are going to a legitimate place, I'm not saying necessarily that one, but just any legitimate one. There's a lot of resources out there. Like Michael Pollan has just wrote a book, How to Change Your Mind, that's very popular right now. And on his website, he has all these pretty reputable resources for finding things. And if you do that and you've been screened and everything else, I'd say you're in good shape.
But because of your ingesting of so many mushrooms, and then the ayahuasca many just things.
And it wasn't even that. It was like the trip itself was absolutely beautiful and wonderful. And you know, people talk about bad trips and it being confusing or making them crazy. That's not what happened. It was the most wonderful trip that I've ever had. It was just that, like, ayahuasca made these, like, prophecies to me, which I didn't take very seriously within the trip, because you should never take any trip, anything that comes to you, terribly seriously.
It's kind of the majority of trips. You're like, I'm tripping. I'm just in a, yeah, you have to remember that, yeah, you're going to get back home.
Take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
But then, and I did that. And then in the subsequent days following that, like, basically everything that it said was going to happen happened to me. And it was like bizarre.
What did it say? Can you explain the prophecies?
Yeah. So it was, this is very embarrassing. I'm happy to share it, but
yeah,
it
please.
Is embarrassing.
If you're cool to share it,
and it's embarrassing because it told me that it was something that, because I was, like, networked with all of these scientists, I was going to find a way of getting more academics interested in exploring the psychedelic realms, and my entry point was going to be through DMT, and it was going to be these DMT extended states. So there's a couple people out there trying to do. So DMT, you smoke it, and it's usually like a 5 to 10 minute long, the most intense experience
of
your life. But they're figuring out how to turn it into an IV and just keep it on a stable. So you can have a DMT trip that's like 4 hours long.
Holy
so you can
fuck.
Spend more time investigating those areas. And so it was saying something like it was going to be related to these DMT extended state experiences. Okay. That was just one of the things. But anyhow, didn't take it very seriously. Came down from the trip. I was on a mountain at the time, didn't have cell phone reception. And then when I got down and I had cell phone reception, my very first text that I got was this guy who was running the first big DMT extended state trial.
Jesus.
And he was like, "Hey, I see you're in town. We're announcing this trial tomorrow on this, like, Gaia TV. And we have all these people here flown from wherever, all these researchers and everything, to talk about it. And we were hoping maybe we could that you would be the first participant in the trial. Like, you'll be the first person ever to do a DMT
for four fucking hours.
State.
Joe Rogan his head would explode. and, like, what? Where do you get it?
And I was like, what? Like,
that's crazy.
I was like, okay. Yeah, sign me up, you know, and whatever.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
And that's like what ayahuasca told me to do last night, weirdly enough. And then, like, I went to this thing, and it was much about what DMT is, and is it this, like, thing that's outside of time and space as we know it. And I started thinking about that. And one of my first shows that I was trying to put together was about time travel. And so I've researched time. It's one of my favorite subjects to think about, but I was kind of sorting out, like, how would that happen, and how could you communicate things, and how could you prove things? And so I started, like, messing around with some ideas, and then it seemed like things just started happening to me that made it feel like maybe I was passing information on to time travelers in the future that were coming back in time and altering my life and reality. And once I started feeling that and experiencing that, and it's not like I thought this was real. It was like shot in the dark, you know, but well beyond like a lottery ticket kind of stuff. Like, I wonder if this would work. Like, I'd like record little like secret messages into my podcast thinking like, well, maybe in the future people are just, maybe like an AI thing is just like downloading everything that's ever been recorded, searching for like how different ideas came along and stuff like that.
Sure. I mean, it is, that exists. I mean, all this stuff is stored in
yeah,
the cloud.
And time travel as far as we know, like borderline possible and according to the laws of physics as
sure.
we know
them. I was going to say, physics would vouch for it.
Physics would vouch for
we
it.
We just don't do it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as we know.
And so
as far as we know. Like... By the way, that should be the name of this podcast, as far as we know. And it is, I believe that. But you believe you were kind of like manifesting these things into reality.
It seemed like I would think of a thing and I would walk outside and the world as I knew it had changed ever so slightly. Like there would be like billboards and things that were just like very different than how I remembered them.
Right. Would you
like
believe in simulation or
universe?
No?
Yeah, I mean, it was an idea that I played around with at the time.
Because that kind of follows a sim theory that you've kind of created your own reality. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm into that. I'm super into it. I
think we construct it so much.
It would seem weirder to me if we aren't in a simulation right now.
Yeah, but I do think sometimes you're probably more in tune with the simulation than other times of your life, right? I mean, I think many people go through their life without being in tune with it, and you probably got really close.
I mean, I guess the way that I think about it is, in terms of as far as that goes, is like, so you build the game Sim or World of Warcraft or whatever. You have these computer programmers. There's a bunch of like ones and zeros. There's a bunch of binary code. There's a bunch of coding and everything underlying all of this, and then you build these characters, and then you eventually want to give them their own characteristics and these individual properties so they can kind of evolve mm-hmm. on their own, and so like within that character is seeing all of these other people and the roller coaster or the building or the mine or whatever you're doing.
And the crouton factory.
Yeah, this is happening. I'm in a crouton factory, and that would be a great way of like of letting. And there are computer models for modeling evolution, like
sure.
the early parts of how trying to sort out how life began on this planet and everything else. And that would be a great like hands off approach of seeing how things evolve on their own, and then. What if eventually, like, one of those things just happened to, like, get into some other thing that allowed it to see, like, the underlying coding and somehow, like, alter some things in ways that it didn't even understand?
And perhaps you could be part of that thing.
And maybe that's what's happening. It's just this butterfly effect thing that I don't fully understand what's happening. Yeah, I watched this episode of Rick and Morty.
It's a great show.
Where they like find this death crystal and you hold on to it and it shows you your death. So like if you turn right, your death is like 10 minutes from now in a horrible mm-hmm. car accident. If you turn left, you live a long life and die with the girl you love next to you. And Morty is just like, He's just holding on to this crystal and he's just like moving about in this way that projects this vision of how he's going to die. And he doesn't understand why or how it's happening or what happens between now and then. He just knows when he moves in this direction that it gets him to the end of this life where he wants to be.
Right.
And there's like this scene where he's like going to surely go and get the death penalty and he's in front of a judge and then he's just like feeling out words like Iowamus Florida 86 coconut band, and then like the judge is like, oh my god, like thinks it's her dead husband,
right?
like talking to her.
Right.
And he doesn't understand the context of which, like what he's saying, how that's relevant to her. But to her, this is like this meaningful thing
right.
that he just stumbled across through like feeling out sounds.
Sure.
And that's what it felt like to me. Like I was just like feeling out these, somehow they were changing things. I didn't understand how.
But it was happening.
It seemed like it was. I don't believe that now, looking back. But did
you check yourself
like,
in?
Kind of believe it. Oh no, that was against my will. I couldn't stop talking about time travel for a very long time.
To whom checked you in? To who?
My girlfriend eventually like took me to a hospital, and then once they were able to sedate me, and then once I wouldn't sleep for like a long time, like a week or two. And then she'd take me into a hospital.
You didn't sleep for a whole week?
I would sleep like 1 or 2 hours a night.
Wow,
and then I'd wake up like springing out of bed with like ideas of like, there's things I need to write down. Or like there's this thing that's after me. And there was times I thought like something inside my mind was trying to take over my body. It was fucking crazy.
Don't say the C word.
Yeah.
I don't like that word.
It was fucking
wild.
Yeah,
because the C word has a negative connotation.
It is. It's also just like people allow themselves to write things off and be like, well, that was just crazy. It's like, well, what does crazy mean then? Like,
right.
Say that was crazy, still explain how did that person go crazy and in what way. You still need to explain how things...
Well, yeah, I don't
know. And crazy is a way of just being like, don't need to think dismissive. About that anymore.
Somebody said that. I can't remember who said it. I swear to God, I thought it was maybe Kanye West. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Blah, blah, blah. Chappelle. Chappelle was talking about... I say Kanye because I know he's been called crazy a million times. Mm-hmm. That was my brain went to... Because people do. They call him crazy because he has mm-hmm. grand ideas. Mm-hmm. And he says things that people disagree with and they get mad about. Chappelle was called crazy. And Dave Chappelle, did you ever hear this? And he said, crazy is so dismissive. It's disgusting. It's like saying, I don't get it, so it's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why they called him crazy when he went away for a while. Crazy is such an incorrect term for someone that's different than you. It's like saying, it's basically saying that you are infallible in your action, and that must be just absurdist because it's not normal to me.
It is. It's like, you know, someone wants to like...
crazy is killing and eating people, by the way. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is like if you want to like shit in someone else's mouth and someone's response to that is like, probably you shouldn't do that. People are like, you're fetish shaming right now. Right. You're judging. That's wrong for you to do. You're but crazy shaming. Is still this thing that people are like okay with.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you thought you were like time traveling or something. You're crazy. It's like, I might have been wrong, I might have been off, but like you still need to figure out why I was off in that way.
But do you think you were wrong, or do you think you just it was an experience?
First off, I had a lot of different ideas, and some of them were absolutely wrong.
Sure.
And especially once paranoia took hold.
But that's what I'm saying. When paranoia's got its claws in you, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Right. But experiences that you lived through, they still existed.
Yeah.
Okay, so they happened.
Yeah.
I'm not giving them any validation. I'm just saying they happened, and it's a part of your history. It's kind of like we all make a lot of different choices and mistakes and positives and negatives in our courses of life.
Sure.
And I feel like they're undeniable, so they happened. And again, not to go call back, but you keep it moving. I think once you've recentered yourself, you just learn to keep it moving to go, okay, I am now ready to have a next chunk of experience and course in my life. And I probably won't make those things again because I don't want to do it again. I'd rather move on to a different chapter.
Yeah.
So I think it's a weird positive because talking to you now, I didn't know this about you. I had no idea. But it's refreshing to hear you be honest about something that you said was embarrassing because I don't think it's embarrassing. I felt embarrassed when I had severe, and I mean severe, panic attacks. I had, what's the fucking term? I can't even think about it. I couldn't leave the house. I had agoraphobia, I think that's it. When you can't leave, I couldn't leave my home. I couldn't leave the place that I was staying at. because I had pure panic, dude. When I walked outside, I felt like I was going to die. My chest would cave in. I would have these ocular migraines. I'd go blind. I had all of this stuff that it was triggered by a million different things. I didn't pay attention to them when they were happening, you know? Mm-hmm. So I led myself. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. Like my friends, I lied to all my friends and I made up stories because I was ashamed to tell them the truth, which I was struggling with my mental health.
Right.
But I was ashamed for no reason. Mm-hmm. It was like, why would I be shameful of something that I'm experiencing? Like, it's not my fucking fault that things are happening. Like, right. This is the way the world works, you know? So I think it taught me a lot about myself. It taught me a lot about, which I imagine this did for you too. It teaches you a lot about your position in the world and what you want to accomplish, where you want to go, what you want to focus on. I think it gives us balance, dude. Mm-hmm. I think like I wouldn't take back that moment for anything, but I don't want to live it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, let's not forget empathy. I mean, that's a really important factor, is certainly everything that I've went through. Like when I pass someone on the street and they're like, you know what, most people are like, holy shit, that's a crazy, like,
there's a crazy
there's a thing
person.
In space that's like telling me that my family's being held hostage or whatever. I'm like, yeah. Yep, that's a thought that you'll have.
Dude, I told a joke one time where I said, and this is true, by my old place, there used to be a guy who I'd give money to once in a while when he had good days, because some days he wouldn't have a good day, and I would stay away from him, and he'd be violent. He would be throwing stuff and breaking shit, and some days he'd be having a good day. And I'd give him a couple of bucks if I was walking down to Trader Joe's, mm-hmm. and he would yell. He would yell and he would be at like kind of like a, I don't know, like at the same angle every time he would yell, just yell and stare into space. You know, he would just stare out up into the distance, and he would scream. And one time, that's why I turned it into a joke, I thought to myself as I'm sitting at a stoplight, I was like, yeah, maybe that guy's got the answer. Like,
yeah.
Maybe he's figured it all out. Like, maybe he's just like professing all this shit. He's like, no one will listen to me. I know all the stuff.
Yeah.
It's just because it's just a different perspective on the world. Yeah. That's all it really was.
I mean, even scarier to me when I think about that is I think there might be a kind of a Pavlovian response sometimes where sometimes, you know, you become a comedian, like, oh, fun.
Yeah.
Won't that be, I'll get up, I'll tell jokes, I'll make people laugh. And then you go and you figure out your rule of three, like, here's my premise. And now I've reinforced an expectation. And now with a third example, I talk about my genitals.
Right.
And you figure out this structure.
Sure.
And, you got it. You know, you sort that out first. If you're good.
If you're going to be good, you'll figure it out.
You'll figure those things out probably first. That's the 101. And then... Right. And not that there's not like some out there oddballs that just like get how that like on thing, you know, Emo Phillips or Eugene Merman or so, that like just get the absurdity like away on a different
level. Some things
level.
Click for some different people.
And, but the point is like you have your fun, cute little jokes. And then one day you get on stage and you had a rough day and then you go like, my fucking neighbor did this and that and like my dick didn't work last night, and then you get like the biggest laugh you've gotten in a while because it's like very genuine and everything.
Yeah, it's real.
And then I think there's something in your head that goes, huh, what just happened there? That was a big... What did I do there? You go back in time and go, oh, I, like, exposed this vulnerability about myself. And I'm like, well, what other, like, nasty little bits of myself can I get into? Then you start, like, being more vulnerable. And I think it can go to an extreme, like in the example of a comedian, where you can eventually be, you know, it becomes this very, like, exhibitionist kind of, like, look at all my naughty parts. And it's actually... I'm much into like, what is the story that your inner world is feeding to your consciousness and why? What are the mechanisms? What are the criteria for it to show you these things that it's deeming relevant for you to experience?
Yeah.
And so is it the case that if you like get known as like this like degenerate comedian that you're that your subconscious just like drives you to get more into these degenerate situations.
Sure.
So you have more of these stories to tell. And is that the case with some of these fucking homeless people out there where they were just like started out of just like, God, I got laid off. It's not going so. And then they had a day where they just couldn't fucking take it anymore. And they're just like, ah. And then the day they went crazy was the day that people put the most fucking money in their cup. And then the internal worlds go like, oh, I know what works for us.
Yeah,
that crazy shtick.
Yeah.
We should keep doing
the
that.
Shtick.
And it might be this.
I've had that same thought. I've said to myself in a more condensed version, I've said, I want to see the
I can
day.
Be a hero.
No, I love it. But I'm saying we had a parallel thought because I thought the same thing, which I was like, I would love to see the day that it started.
Yeah.
I'm saying what you're saying. It's wild.
Right.
I just saw the little piece of it. Yours is much more in depth.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot, dude. Okay. But I would love to see the day that it started because I imagine the crux of that was fascinating. Like the beginnings of those things, of anything.
I bet it was a small break.
Always. It always is, though, isn't it? Isn't
it
like the same
crack.
Thing with comedy?
Yeah.
The same thing with any kind of, you know, anything in our universe like that becomes a larger thing usually starts extremely small. And then we're like, oh, shit. It opens up this door to a million other things.
Like and me being someone who's never actually seen Tim and Eric, but say like Tim and Eric actually tried in the beginning to like make a high quality thing. And then like they looked at it and trying to edit it and it was like, kind of laughable, but then they're like, but that's actually funny.
Yeah.
And then you get rewarded for that. And then
totally.
It's like, they might have just been very normal dudes that then just, got rewarded.
Well,
like,
I mean, that happens in our society all the time. It's like a lot of musicians will say that they didn't intend on making that kind of music. I'm not saying the majority, but I'm saying there's people that go, you know, there's a kid named Post Malone. Do you know who that is? Are you familiar with him? He even out loud was like, I'm not a rapper, but like they rapper categorized him. He's like, I just make fucking music. And now he sings a lot. He does a kind of like folky country stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And people were trying to put their finger on him, but he was like, you guys said that I was a rapper.
I
didn't say that. I fucking, because just because I rapped a few times.
Sturgill Simpson's kind of the same way.
I love Sturgill Simpson.
Yeah.
I fuck with that dude so hard. I think he's incredible.
I don't know about him, but
he can't be categorized. He's someone who loves psychedelics. He likes the sauce. He likes to explore his mind, and his writing reflects that. There's a great story I think I've told on this podcast, but I like to say it to people that don't know. He on two albums ago, on I think it's Time Traveler's Guide to the Universe. I think that was the album, but he did Nirvana's In Bloom, and maybe one of the best songs that he ever wrote. In Bloom is such a good fucking song because it was Nirvana's way of professing to the audience that they didn't get him.
It
was insane. He was really saying, he was like, you know, he's the one that likes all our pretty songs and he likes to sing along, but he doesn't know what it means. He likes to shoot his gun. He has no idea that like Kurt was kind of inundated with these bro fans that he was like,
You're not
who this is for. But oddly enough, that's who we attract. And so,
especially he was like fucking with people all the time too,
constantly.
Which is like he would have like his method was like, here's one line that is profound and meaningful, and then the next line is pure gibberish.
Yeah, it's nonsense.
And then back and forth like that, and people didn't get it, and they read into every line.
But that can be music does that so much that some things get misinterpreted so many times that they're so far away from the original meaning that even the artist goes, I don't even know, you know? But Sturgill, I guess, had said he wanted to do the song, and I guess he wrote Kurt Cobain's trust or whatever, you know, your legacy or whatever they call that, and said that he wanted to do it, and daughter and, you know, Courtney Love or whatever, whomever runs the trust was like, you know, we don't really like to put out Kurt's song. We don't let other people kind of redo the songs. That's not really what he wants to do. And I guess Sturgill made the song. I might be a little bit off on the tail of it, but I guess he made the song and sent it to her or just sent her the music without the lyrics or one of the two. And then they approved it, apparently. It was like, this is... It's honestly, I'll play it with you when you're off the podcast. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. It makes me feel so many things because it's just is like this it's this call to a generation, obviously, for my youth that was like so meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. And also for my guy who I like as a musician, who traditionally a lot of people in his category wouldn't fucking play Nirvana. Do you know what I mean? Like, it probably wouldn't be a lot of country music artists, whatever the fuck you want to say. But I think that's the beauty, which is also the beauty of great comedy, dude, which is why what you just said was so cool before that about making a transition into what finding what you really want to do in comedy is fucking wild. It's cool that you're finding your specific niche about the talks that you want to have, the interactions, a conversationalist, I think you said about somebody before. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you want to become. That's what you are becoming, because you don't want to get labeled. I think that's pretty tits, if I can use the expression. Are you on tour right now? Where can people come see you and come the fuck out and do that?
Fucking everywhere.
Everywhere. Is it ShaneMoss.com?
All of the time. ShaneMoss.com. My main thing that I do full time is stand up science, which is two scientists, second comedian on each show, half science talks, half comedy. And now I just did a trial run of a psychedelic version of that called Head Talks.
Cool.
And I'm now touring with that every few months. I'm kind of a little more at the whim of my guests there, because it's harder to find psychedelic researchers than scientists in every city. And then I still do regular stand-up from time to time. But if you get to see me do regular stand-up, that doesn't... I have a goal of only doing 3 weeks of regular comedy club stand-up next year. Or no, 4 weeks. And I already have 3 of those weeks booked. So there's only going to be one more. And it's going to have to be like one of my favorite clubs in the country.
Well, so I love that. Go taste the chocolate.
Check out my podcast. Here we are.
Check out Here We Are.
We'll put a bunch of science stuff in a hopefully accessible and entertaining way.
They'll like it. I know they will. We'll put all that shit in the description below. We'll put ShaneMoss.com down there.
And by the way,
yeah.
Could I tell you, when we were talking about moving on?
Yeah.
Actually, the name of the Here We Are podcast is about how I talk with evolutionary biologists and psychologists and neuroscience people and psychologists, a lot of life science stuff, but a lot of people addressing kind of the expanse of the human condition and all of the different variables that go into why you bought the thing for a gift for Christmas for your friend. Like, breaking that down to like a billion years ago.
Oh, that's what wild. Happened.
And I sometimes get so caught up on that it's just like life is just so complex and so overwhelming that I almost start, and I'm not one, I don't have anxiety or like panic issues much. I have depression stuff, but sometimes it just gets so vast that I'm just like, what the fuck? And the only thing that I can tell myself is just like, well, here we are. That's my kind of mantra, keep it moving. Keep it moving.
Well, here we are and keep it fucking moving.
Yeah.
Dude, it's been honestly a pleasure. I want to link everything for everyone below in the description. Please go see this dude. I think he's incredible. I don't get to see him enough. I'm glad that I got to see you. I'm glad I got to see you.
This was fucking so good. This is great.
Here's what we do. You have to stare into the camera, just you solo, and I'm going to walk away, and you're going to either say a word or a phrase that closes out the show. Go ahead.
Oh, this is a lot of pressure. All right. Drink up, everybody.
In here, we pour whiskey, 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 whiskey.
You were that creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy and ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
Gingers, oh hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.